Hey, folks, in today's podcast episode with Kelly Starrett, you'll hear Kelly talk about his dorky little chili pad that he puts on his bed, and he talks a little bit about the grounding and the earthing that I do when I'm asleep.
Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. I get laughed at. Maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever. But I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. And these are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. Lila Q, LEELAQ.com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off. Lila Q. com. Use code BEN10 for 10% off.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and I actually haven't talked about this on the podcast before, I don't think, but for the past month, I've been trying out this new protocol. So as I do every day, I start off each day with a routine, but I've been adding just a little bit to my morning routine, about 5 minutes of what's called the ready to run program. So for example, like on Mondays, I do something called a couch stretch and then a two ball smash and floss on my shins, on the front of my legs. And then on Tuesdays, I've got this thing called a T-spine global smash that I do, and also a global gut smash, which just sounds fantastic and feels even better. Wednesdays, I've got this thing called the plantar blitzkrieg. I mean, it's these crazy number of weird moves. I grabbed them all off of page 250 of this new book that's called Ready to Run. And on that page, there's this month-long mobility overhaul plan, it's called, that's laid out day by day. It's just these little things you do every day to allow you to overhaul your mobility, as the title implies. Well, the guy who wrote that book actually also wrote another book that I've talked about before quite a bit on the podcast called Becoming a Supple Leopard. It's like the Bible on mobility and on fixing all your little aches and pains. His name is Kelly Starrett. He is a physical therapist. He works with a ton of folks, the elite Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, athletes from the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, the MLB, you name it, a ton of natural and world-ranked strength, power athletes, CrossFitters. And he really is the genius when it comes to figuring out pain, figuring out injury, optimizing athletic performance. And this new book really kind of takes the laser sniper rifle to running specifically, and how to become a better runner, how to unlock your athletic potential when it comes to running. And it really is a good book, and mine is already completely dog-eared with stuff I want to talk to Kelly about today. So Kelly, thanks for coming on the call, man.
No, man, good to hear your voice again.
Yeah. So you've got this book, and you co-wrote it with TJ Murphy, who I actually know from the triathlon world.
Oh, yeah. I fell in love with TJ, man love. A few years ago, he came as a broken runner to the gym. You know, Brian McKenzie had sent him, and, he was editor-in-chief for Competitor Magazine, and had basically been told, hey, you're going to have to stop running. And I was like, yeah, I don't think that's really the case. And we started sort of this odyssey and journey, and it got to the point where he was saying, hey, we've got to codify this. Let me help you. And what's so fun about riding with someone like TJ is he's like Rain Man level savant about every trend in running. You know, he knows everyone, has been to every race, and, has, a dozen, Ironman under his belt and, 50 marathons or what, ridiculous amount of actual endurance running stuff. And so, we can really take this long view and also look backwards and mesh the things. And the perfect guy to be able to sort of lend the embodied knowledge of the last 30 years of messing around with, how did we get here and why are we still so injured? And, running is the thing that is literally makes us humans. And why do we look at it this way? And why do some of us heel strike? It was just, such a fun experiment. And, if you're listening, chances are running lives in your life at some point. And yeah, as you know, whether you like it or not, you play basketball, you're a runner. You are going to run if you play Frisbee. So what are we even talking about? Like, why aren't we looking at running critically? Because you can run better and you can definitely run safe. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the way that you look at running is really interesting in the book. And obviously, it's called Ready to Run, and you actually lay out a bunch of standards that you think people should be ready to be able to complete to really, truly be ready to run. You've got like 12 different standards in here. And I mean, like, I know you've done podcasts about this book before, and obviously, you know, people can go read the book if they want to dig to each and every one of these standards that you lay out, from like hip flexion, hip extension, hot spots, hydration, compression, you name it. But I wanted to ask you about a few of the things. You know, I've got like some pages turned over in the book that I found were really interesting when I was going through it, and kind of see where our conversation goes from there.
Let's do it.
But yeah, one of the things that you talk about, like chapter four, you talk about neutral feet. When you say neutral feet, I'm interested in what you mean by that, because like for a long time, I kind of thought you're supposed to look at your feet, and whichever way that they were naturally pointing when you look down at your feet is kind of like the way that you were naturally born, and that's the way that you should run. Are you saying that that's not the case?
Well, let's just say that I mount the wheel on my car and it's pointing to the right. You know, one of my wheels is pointing to the right. I can still drive 100 miles an hour, but I'm going to incur some costs for having my wheels pointed in different directions. So what's good news is we've really been able to come to understand what is the best function. And here's what you can understand about that, for example, is that if you lay down at the beach, right, and you lay on your back in the chair, in the chaise, where do your feet do? They fall out, right?
Right.
They fall out to the side. And it's really annoying because you end up burning the inside of your legs, and you have to kind of prop yourself up and so that you get even tanning. I mean,
yeah,
these are
horrible.
The important things.
It's horrible. So much sunscreen.
Right. And you have to like tie your big toes together. Well, what's happening there, if we explain that, is that you have normal sort of fascia patterns. So the patterns of your connective tissue are designed that when you stand with your feet straight, you're automatically creating a stabilizing torsion or a twisting force in the limb. And one of the problems that we see the body is these very linear, forward and backward, simple mechanical, you know, systems. And they're not. There's a lot of torsion component to that. In fact, you know, if we look at the hip, even the hip capsule, that bag of connective tissue that makes the hip stable, the hip capsule unwinds when your legs fall out. And so you basically are taking all the passive tension out of the springiness out of this fascial connective tissue system. And so what happens then is that if you aren't training yourself to put your foot down flat, you're basically unwinding some of the passive structures that are, and I don't mean flat, I mean straight, you're unwinding some of the passive structures that are giving the entire mechanical chain from your foot all the way up into your low back. You're losing that stability. You're losing. So when we taught in yoga, for example, they figured this out and they call it Tadasana, about having your feet straight and your big toe on the ground, and they call it rooting into the earth, right? But that rooting into the earth is really the position we talk about in terms of creating a stable functioning ankle and a knee that's stable and a hip that functions well. And if you look at any of the sprinters, I mean, you know, you're in the block straight, feet should be straight. And what is useful about this is that most of us end up, you know, like you can understand that, like, hey, I stand like my mom, you know, my dad, and they stood like ducks, and no one ever told me to get my feet straight. And so remember that. I think sometimes people forget that now I'm a coach, I'm a physical therapist, and I've seen all the injuries. I mean all of them. And I can basically backtrack through the injury through some kind of pathological mechanical issue. And the research has shown that probably 80% of injuries are motor control related. That means that we're not sure about the technique, and that leaves us with some instability. For example, if my feet are turned out, then every single time I take a step, when the hip is in extension, i.e. behind me, right? So I start with my foot out, suddenly my hip is never going to be stable. And so what ends up happening, if I'm walking like a duck and then I actually take a step in that duck shape, then as soon as the leg comes behind me, the whole hip architecture has become mechanically unstable. And so that leg really does need to be straight. So as I translate over the hip, that the hip becomes mechanically stable, and then I can generate more force in that position. My hamstrings work like hamstrings. My quads work like quads. My hip flexors work correctly. But the other thing that happens is that as I strike the ground again on my next step, right, my ankle is unstable. And so it takes a long time for the stability of the ankle to kick in, all the structures. And this is where I start to see radical pronation. Suddenly then, as I translate over that collapsed foot, that we get a collapse in the navicular bone, that the big toe starts to kick in. This is the mechanism of the bunion. Now my plantar fascia isn't pulling correctly. Now my Achilles is not tracking straight up and down. And so you know what's easier? It's easier to make sure that you're practicing with your feet straight. And remember that you ended up sort of adopting those patterns for a reason. And those reasons are usually I've been wearing high heel shoes my whole life, i.e. I'm not walking around flat. I actually wear high heels. I sit a lot. And so my tissues have adapted to some of those habitual environmental loads. And that becomes the easiest position to be in, sort of the most entropic, the positions of greatest entropy where it costs me nothing. Blah. And so basically what you're doing when you're standing without practicing, you're getting your feet straight, is you're laying on the beach with your legs flying out. So if you want your ankles to work correctly, don't want to impinge, all the things up the chain we're talking about, just practice getting your feet straighter. Now, I know that there are some people out there listening with hip dysplasia, but that still doesn't mean they need to be turned out as far. Because remember that my goal is to create as much torsion as I can in the pelvis. And when I'm standing, if I'm going to create a squatting or deadlifting position with my feet straight, I'm screwing my feet through my hips into the ground externally. So my right foot's on a dinner plate. It spins clockwise. My left foot's on a dinner plate. It spins counterclockwise, but I don't let it spin. And now I've got a mechanism of stability to create my back stability, et cetera, et cetera. So create the stability.
So I'm standing here right now, or let's say somebody's listening. They're standing. They look down at their feet. They're pointed out a little bit. What you're saying is point the feet straight, and then your right foot – I'm standing right now as I'm saying this. Your right foot, you're trying to drive that one clockwise without –
through the hip.
Without the actual foot moving – thinking about all the muscles contracting that would normally cause that foot to turn clockwise, your left foot counterclockwise, and I'm doing it right now.
Yeah,
you kind of feel like your glutes turn on.
Yes.
The adductors turn on a little bit. Interesting.
That's right. So, and look at your arches. You have beautiful arches again.
Yeah, they come up.
And that's what's crucial to people understand is that it's this whole mechanical movement. Because remember, I'm wired for movement. I'm not wired for musculature. It's the movement that supports the arch, the knee, the whole thing. And when I – go ahead and now watch this. So you're standing with your feet straight. Look at how your weight is distributed. It should be, center of mass right in front of your ankle bone, but I should have sort of 3 points of contact. You with me? You feel how balanced you are from toe to front to back? Now turn your feet out 30 degrees because this is where most people are walking and hanging out.
So now I'm duck foot.
Okay. Now feel where your weight is to your feet.
Yeah,
it's all the way on your heels, isn't it?
It feels like it shifts it backwards.
As long as I
focus on not leaning into the microphone.
It's
shifting it backwards into my heels. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. And so what's happened is we've just taken your foot and made it not work like a foot.
Yeah.
Right? So you're basically doing wheelies off of that system all the time.
So one of the things that people should do before they're out putting on this heavy running mileage is get to the point where they can almost like, would you say subconsciously, just be able to stand around, like if you're standing in line at the grocery store or whatever, and if you look down and you're no longer doing that duck foot thing, then you're good to go?
Well, I would say two things. One is that, before we started, you were saying, hey, you just finished two back-to-back Spartan races, right?
Yeah.
How you feeling? How you feeling today?
2 days ago. A little beat up.
Right. So let's pretend like this is a moving target. Let's pretend like I always have a waypoint or a benchmark of saying this is optimal movement mechanics and this is what my tissue should feel like. And then sometimes I'm going to be traveling a lot or I'm going to compete in a bunch of races or I'm going to do some other wacky thing or I'm going to take my eye off my performance for a second. And then this gives me a place to say, oh, look how far away from baseline normal function I am, right? It's basically, do you remember when you, in middle school, when you got you were screened for scoliosis by your PE teacher? Remember that?
No, because I was homeschooled. I was allowed to have scoliosis as much as I wanted.
Dude, I'll have a second helping.
But I have been screened for scoliosis before at health fairs. Yes.
But so you basically leaned forward and this untrained eye, right, of your gym teacher was like, your spine goes left, your spine goes right, your spine goes straight. Well, if that person can identify complex spinal mechanics in terms of, hey, I'm going left or right, we can also begin to develop the eye for the problems. So, you know, that foot should be going basically straight up and down in a line when someone's running. So if someone's running at you, that foot should look like it's a piston and going straight up and down. And if you see deviation or circling in that foot, right, it doesn't mean that that person isn't fast, but what you're seeing is lost efficiency and potentially the precursors, the pathomechanical sort of, you know, knocking on the door of injury. And what I can tell you unequivocally is I'm going to have to resolve those things either because you're injured or because you want to go faster. And those are the same sides of the coin. So if we can create sort of a ready state for people and some benchmarks, hey, just stand, practice staying with your feet straight. Now you're becoming and practicing better, being a better runner all the time. And guess what? You may find that that feels uncomfortable because you're so far stinking away from normal that, you know, let's work on it. And you know, we know it takes about 7 months to turn all of your connective tissue over in your body if you're healthy, 7 months to remodel all your fascia, right? 18 months to literally turn over all your skeletal mass. It takes a while. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. You know what staying with your feet straight does? Costs you nothing.
I remember you talking about that in our last podcast we did on Supple Upper. And by the way, if you guys are listening in and you want the show notes or anything, I'll put them all over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/ready-to-run, along with the previous podcast I did with Kelly. But yeah, I remember you talking about how long it takes, Kelly, to reinvent the fascia. And yeah, you got to be in it for the long haul. It's amazing how long it takes to change the body.
And you know, I think you've just gotten to the heart of it. And so it's interesting because I've seen you run. And you're a very efficient runner. You run well, and all the aspects of your life sort of support that. And you know, and you and I are pretty dorky about some of the things that we do, right? You know, you sleep on grounding sheets and magnets, and I sleep with this cool chili pad that like circulates cold water underneath my body. I mean, why? Because I want to kick ass tomorrow, and but my point is, you know, we have got to create a ready state for ourselves that lets us then continue to play the long game. And, you know, if you did that race, you know, of any race, and people can relate to this, what are the two questions we typically ask people about the race? We ask them how far it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we ask them how fast they did it. We don't ask them about any other information. How was your technique? You know, how did you overcome? You know, I mean, we rarely dive down and, you know, what we have all been saying is, hey, let's make this about, you know, technique. Let's make this about skill. And then we'll test our skill and our capacity with these runs and races. And, you know, if we're not looking at it that way, then I can guarantee you, you're going to run up against the wall that says injury or decreased performance or something, because that's what the data says, you know, is going to happen to you. 80% of us, you know, are going to get injured in the year.
Yeah,
no, it's crazy.
It's just like the new college football rankings. It's not about whether or not you win. It's how pretty you did it. So, I have to admit though too, after reading that section of your book, I have not been in flip flops, or really high heels either for that matter.
You nailed it. And let's talk about those two things. Cause I think people are really much more sophisticated than we ever thought they were. Like, you know, if you listen to the Ben Greenfield experience, like you are, whether you like it or not, you can consider yourself the one percenter in terms of nutrition and optimization of sleep. And like, you really are paying attention to all these things. You know, I think that, you know, what's happening is that a lot of times we've been sabotaging ourselves in our day-to-day lifestyle mechanics. And, you know, one of the things that kills us is that most of us are wearing high heel shoes all the time. And then you go out and like your shoe is pretty flat, isn't it, Ben?
Yeah, I'm running in. I'm running in Scoras primarily right now, which is zero
great
drop.
Shoe. Yeah, yeah. But so you know that's a pretty heavy duty thing. You're going and running, and you're not just running; you're competing in Scoras, and like that means you're doing like jumping on obstacles that require full range of motion in your ankles, and you're needing your fascia to be fashion. That means that you have sort of either one were have been normal all along, or have been creating a ready state in your environment. And so what I'm talking about is that people are wearing high heel shoes all the time. When I say high heel, that's anything with a differential. And so they cruise around systematically shortening their heel cord, 10,000 steps a day, mm-hmm. you know, 200 plus steps and 400 meters. I mean, just do the math, and it extrapolates into freakish amounts of loading cycles. Then we go try to drop down to this barefoot, you know, flat shoe, which we think, oh, we should be able to do. And all of a sudden we end up blowing up. And that was one of the reasons we called this thing Ready to Run. You know, people sued Vibram Five Finger, right? And they settled for what, $2.5 million or something like that, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? You know, like, you know, you've been wearing this 1 centimeter plus differential, and the average differential is over 1 centimeter. And then all of a sudden you went flat, and then you expressed your huge aerobic engine on your like crappy Yugo transmission, and you blew up. Like, you deserve that. You know, that wasn't smart. Yeah. So what you've done is, hey, you're flat all the time, you're barefoot all the time, whether you're grounding or just being barefoot, or that's healthier, or well, what you're doing is you're creating, you know, that tolerance for the system to be flat and to function optimally. Then I'm saying, hey, let's go ahead and give you a little differential if your mechanics are off. So if you're going to run in less than 5 mil. Let's give yourself some breathing room to make errors or not be perfect, but then rest of the time, let's be flat versus what we have done, which is wear high heel shoes and then go run in my flat shoes.
Yep, exactly. So another thing, just to stray away from feet here for a second, that you get into the book as another standard is something that you call hip extension. And I was actually in the Seattle airport a couple of days ago doing this new stretch that you talk about in this book. I was actually in the little kids play area there in the Seattle airport, because they have this perfect little couch in there that runs the length of the wall that's perfect for this stretch in the book that you call the couch stretch. And you define it as a weapons grade technique to open up the hip and the slack upstream of the knee. So what exactly is the couch stretch, and why is it so important? Why do you include that in the book? It's something that's it's not only in the book, but if you go to the mobility program at the end of the book, it's like on a ton of the days in there. So obviously you think this thing's pretty darn important.
Well, so, you know, what we try to do with Supple Leopard is I'm like, here's my theory. Here's what the physiology is. Here's how we express that. And it's a really heavy duty, you know, tome. It's 400 plus pages. We have a new one coming out that's 500 pages in January. And what I wanted to do is strip away the technique and just give people the manual. Here's what you need to do. Don't worry about why. If you want to know why, you can go read this book. But if you just need to know that, you know, how to turn your iPhone on and not care how the glass interacts with the battery, then you don't need the other book, right? So, but the part of the theory is, hey, when we're looking at normal sort of indigenous mechanics. And these are normal mechanics that we're trying to express, not super normal gymnast, yogi, hypermobile things. This is things that everyone agrees on as baseline for human. American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, American Academy of Pediatric Physicians, the family practitioners, all the physical therapists, everyone agrees on what the range of motion is over the population. And so my hypothesis and the theory that we work on and the way we treat all dysfunction at the highest levels of sport is I'm like, show me you have full start position and finish position of the movement that you're doing. And the couch stretch is when you take that foot and, you know, put your knee in the corner and then prop yourself up in sort of a high lunge, right? What's going to happen is you're going to quickly see that you're missing the end range of the running position. Mm-hmm. And so I call that the sort of in the book, in Sub Leopard, I call that MOB 2, or the second position, which is the finish position. And so what I'm asking you to do is express leg flexion. So can you bring your, like if you're doing a heel kick to warm up, right? That's a very common exaggerated position. But what we're seeing is that people actually can't heel kick and have their leg into extension. And so what we're exaggerating in that position is, hey, let's spend time in this extension position with the lower leg fully flexed while we simultaneously try to open up the hip. And what you'll see is that most of us are spending, you know, we're obsessed with standing right now and not sitting, but most of us are sitting 10 to 14 hours a day, honestly. And it's hard to not sit more than 3 hours. It's really hard. But what we're doing is we're not spending any time actually extending the hip into this end range. And so you maybe do a little bit of walking, but that hip is not anywhere near to where that it's coming into extension behind you like we do when we run. And so we're basically going hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and then we're barely ever touching those corners. And if you miss having full range of motion with that leg flexed and the hip extended, like in the couch stretch, mm-hmm. then what you're going to do is you're going to end up compensating. And people can relate to this. If you grab a telephone pole or like a signpost and stretch your quads, you know, you grab your foot, like the classic runner stretch that everyone does for 2 seconds before they run.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Where does your knee go? It goes out,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you grab your heel, your knee goes, flies out. And what your body's basically doing is dumping that tension. It's a tension dump. And so by dropping the knee out, you basically shortened the insertion origin of those anterior tissues, and you've made it so that there's no tension on the system. Well, imagine running, and suddenly in the end, your leg spins out, and now you're swinging your leg through space, and it's going to be impossible for you to contact the ground. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of times we see a lot of foot strike problems in our population of runners. Foot strike, right? We overstride, we're out in the right part of my foot, et cetera, et cetera. And that is not a result of a foot contact problem. That is a result of an extension problem mm-hmm. because it's a contiguous motion. And so if you're a swimmer, for example, if you can't finish your stroke with a good shoulder mechanic, what I can guarantee you is not you're not going to fix it in the air onto your next stroke, and so your catch is going to be off. Well, when your foot comes down when you run, that's exactly like the catch in the water, but most of us are catching in a ridiculously weak position. The problem is, as you know, because we're designed to move and we have to be able to move in order to reproduce and feed ourselves and hunt, we have this amazing capacity to buffer these bad mechanics for a long time. Because imagine if we were really that sensitive that if you struck, you know, you're weird with your feet, you know, you would immediately have pain, you couldn't walk, da da da. I mean, you would be dead on the savannah in 2 seconds. But because we can basically buffer all these really, really weird mechanics because the engineering is so good, we confuse that with the right way.
Yeah, and this couch stretch, basically you're getting yourself into that hip extension, but because the knee is touching the ground when you're doing that stretch, you're not allowed to compensate in the same way that you would if you were to do that pull a heel up to the butt and do a quad stretch.
And what I'm asking you to do is, it's shocking. I was just with the Cleveland Indians, you know, on Thursday, and, mm-hmm. You know, such a great organization, totally progressive. And I was working with one of their pitchers, and I was like, hey, let me just show you this. And he couldn't even get up into a high kneeling position. Wow. So imagine if his job is to extend off the back leg, right? But he can't extend off the back leg, mm-hmm. i.e. he can't run. So right. What ends up happening to his pitching mechanics? He still can throw 90 miles an hour. That's how good he is. But what happens if we just take the roadblocks out of the way? I mean, you know, so let's just give you the idea that, hey, show me that your tissues are healthy. Show me that you're warming up and cooling down, not being a jackass. Let's give you full range of motion on the front and back end of the tissue cycle, of the loading cycle. And then now we can talk about, do you have the right technique or not? But right now you can't even express good technique because you don't have the mechanics to.
Yeah, yeah. And you just hold this couch stretch for about 2 minutes or so on each side. Oh, and it's amazing.
Sometimes I do it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's a hard stretch. It's deceptively hard. But if you're listening in, learn the couch stretch. Check it out. And that's definitely one of the pages in the book I'd recommend you flip to and learn ASAP as you're going through.
You know, and what's cool is that I'm really, like, the things that I'm most interested in right now are, you know, how do we scale these things at institutional level? Mm-hmm. Like situations, right? Because one-on-one, like anyone comes to see you as a private coach, they're going to get better, right? But how do I take our thinking and apply it to middle school and high school and colleges and big teams and 50 people? And the couch stretch requires no equipment, can be done anywhere. And for our kids, holy crap, it is a life-changing experience for kids.
Yeah, yeah. You don't even need a couch to do the couch stretch. So
yeah.
There you go.
And I call it the couch stretch because I would do it watching TV to distract myself.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. It's good for any time you have some kind of a surface behind you, you can put the leg up against even a wall. It works perfectly.
And if you're a runner, literally, you should be able to, you know, jump up there keep your butt squeezed. I mean, it tells us a lot of things. So if you load up in the couch stretch and try to squeeze your butt, just squeeze your glute. What you're going to see is that people are like, oh, my, I can't squeeze my butt. I'm like, oh, you have gluteal deficiency syndrome, right, disorder. Well, you know, that gluteal amnesia, what you're seeing is that if your hip is short, your butt cannot squeeze. You cannot activate or recruit your butt. And so it's not that your butt is weak, that it's in what I call positional inhibition. And so if you want your butt to work really well, you have to be able to have that leg come into extension. If you can't come into extension, your butt never works. And so now you're just living off of your quads and your psoas and your iliacus, and no wonder your body's freaking out all the time. You know, and that IT band problem that everyone has, it's because their pelvis is so overextended. Yeah. And then not only is their pelvis overextended, so that tightens up the TFL, but as they swing the leg around, they're basically slamming that foot down at 30 degrees or 20 degrees turned out. And then you add this horrible torsion right where that IT band inserts into your lower leg. And that, of course, you can't put a 30-degree twist right in the middle of the cable and not expect some dysfunction. So at the very least, I mean, you're nailing it. If we can get into good start position, finish position, life gets a lot easier, faster.
Yeah, cool. I want to hit on something else that you talk about in the book, Kelly. Voodoo bands, voodoo floss bands. I love these because they fly under the radar, and not a lot of people really know about this technique. But I love it. And I'm curious if you could describe how it works. Like how do you do floss band, and what do you need to do it, and why should you do it?
Sure. Let me tell you the story of the floss band. So we had this world champion powerlifter, world record holder, Donnie Thompson at the house, and he was working with a guy named Dick Hertzel, who invented the jump stretch band, right, that you use for like – making powerlifters better and things like that, right? You use them on for heavy squats and deadlifts. And then he created this band that he was using to just wrap a swollen tissue. So if your ankle was swollen, he was like, well, why don't we create tons of compression on that to just de-swell the ankle? So you compress the ankle. So Donnie left one of those bands for me. I was like, this is really great. I totally see that. And you can go onto our website and see the original video with Donnie Thompson wrapping my ankle. And then I happened to be out at Westside Barbell with Louis Simmons, working with some powerlifters out there later on. And I noticed that those athletes, Louis Simmons and those athletes, were literally duct taping their hamstrings.
Wow.
So while they were squatting, they were duct taping. And I was like, that's pretty severe, right? Because the duct tape doesn't stretch, and you potentially create a really, really hard edge where the tissue can tear next to the duct tape. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just make bulls up and tears. But I literally was like, and I put three and three together, and I went home and I grabbed that thing, that tape, and I started wrapping it really tight and started moving around it. And I was able to get through old hamstring tears and old surgery repairs. And I noticed, because remember, I'm a physical therapist and I know what ART is. In fact, they taught ART, right? This sort of fascial pinning and shifting.
Active technique. Release technique.
Yeah, they taught that.
Therapy, one of the two.
And if you've ever sat on a lacrosse ball and kicked your leg out, you're doing what we talk about, right? And, you know, pin and stretch, whatever we call it, tack and floss. But I realized that when we teach ART to people, we actually are teaching this circumferential grip. So I basically grab the whole fascial sheath. So I grab a circular grip around the limb I'm trying to change. And then I have you move. And what I realized was that I could reproduce nearly to full effect all of the ART level treatments with this band. And I could do it myself. And as I experimented, some of the things that we came up with was that we noticed that we could, you know, create really, like, get all the layers shearing and sliding again. Because your tissue should be like layers of warm silk sliding over steel springs. And they're not. They are like tacked down, gnarly grilled cheese sandwiches with ice picks going in them. It is so bad, right? It is. If you're sitting right now, for example, you're not sitting on your sit bones. You're sitting on your hamstrings. And their hamstrings, you're about 100 degrees. Let's say you're an adult male, like 180 pounds. You have 90 pounds of pressure on about 6 inches of your hamstring at 100 degrees. I mean, you're laminating those beautiful contractile tissues together all the time. And so you can see how quickly a lot of our tissues get stuck down. And restoring those sliding surfaces is crucial element to dealing with, you know, a lot of dysfunction. What we found is that we're putting the tissues under compression and then releasing the band also basically caused this reperfusion. Blood came crashing back in, water came crashing back in, and we're able to really restart blood circulation to tissues that weren't well perfused and had been shut down from swelling or cold injury, and plus restoring the mechanics. And it was easy, and those bands cost like, what, $8 a piece, and they never wear out. I mean, it was just such a no-brainer.
I think it's awesome. I actually have been using a band just because I have so many freaking bicycle tubes in my garage. You wrap above the joint, you wrap below the joint, and you just kind of, you know, you have a bunch of diagrams in your book, but you just, like, you know, like your knees, for example, you know, you wrap above and below and flex them through a range of motion. And, you know, a tweaky knee feels way different after you finish doing that. It's almost like it milks inflammation out of the knee.
Yeah, well, we know we're pushing swelling out of the tissue, so that's good. And then we're also, you know, we're pushing garbage out and bringing groceries in. And then we're also restoring a lot of these sort of very sophisticated, you know, tissue level dynamics. So, for example, one of the problems we see with a lot of the tendonitis, tendinosis level problems, everyone's had a little like inflamed, you know, tendon in front of their patella, right, in their kneecap. One of the problems is that it's the relationship between the tendon sheath and the skin, and also the tendon sheath and the actual tendon. And when we start to restore how those things slide past one another, literally we see things that have been very, very painful but can instantly not painful, and then the tissue starts to normalize. And because you're actually doing a real movement, and this is a crucial aspect to this, you're using the tissues the way they were supposed to be used. So you're loading them, you've got approximation in the joint, you're weight bearing, and you're actually doing the movement that it was designed to do, like squatting, right? So you're not pretending to do a squat-like motion, you're actually doing the motion you're trying to change, which really does change how the tissue is loaded and expressed, which is why we always say, hey, mobilize at the position of restriction. Let's try to make it as much realistic as we can. And that's pretty profound.
Yeah. You know, one last question that I have for you, Kelly, is I'm curious, like, for your day, when you set up your day, are you pretty much starting every day with some kind of soft tissue work? Are you just doing like intensive sessions one or two times a week, you know, like a foam roller session or a session where you're just hunting down tight spots on your body? Or how does Kelly Starrett personally tackle this when it comes to hunting down issues?
Well, I'll tell you what, you really speak to something that I think is crucial for people to understand, is that I, just like everyone else, I'm a normal person. I have two kids. You know, I have a job, crazy businesses with my wife. I still get some training in. When do I work this out? And I, you know, I'm going to go back for a second, because last time we chatted, you talked to me about your gratitude journal, you know?
Yep.
And my wife and I started that practice.
The 5-minute journal.
Yeah. We started the 5-minute journal, at home, and it was really, really profound. And I told you we'd already sat down with our kids and said that, but we started kind of incorporating that. So the first thing we do is we don't check email, we don't do any of that stuff. We sort of set the intention for the day. What we do that changes our life is the first thing I do in the morning is I walk my kids to school. And I know everyone can't do that, but it's for us, it's about a 5K round trip trip. So we walk to school every day, and that 25 minutes of walking, you know, really does change everything. If I couldn't walk, I would be in a hot tub in the morning. That would be, you know, typically what I would do first. But that walking really starts to just normalize the tissue, which is equivalent to doing like a sun salutation in yoga, which is what they were doing. Hey, let's touch the corners of the archetypes, right? It's like Pavel's super joints. Mm-hmm. Like, take your joints into everything they're supposed to do and just move them around and just de-gristle yourself in the morning, right? Just deal with the stiffness. And so I walk, that gets me hot and sweaty. I come back, you know, I've already had probably a little, you know, a little fat and maybe a little protein. Then I come back and have a real breakfast, and then, you know, right into the gym. And right, for example, right now I've been answering emails and podcasts and doing a couple of interviews, but I have been working on the floor the entire time. So I've been squatting, I've been kneeling, I've been sort of thinking about getting ready for the workout at 2:00. And that's what I want people to understand. One is, if you think you're going to save up an hour during the day and then just hit this, you'll never do it. So what I want to do is get people sort of noodling around all day long. Like, if you're you know, on the phone, stand up and put a lacrosse ball on your feet, work on your feet. You know what I mean? If you can check your email in a lunge, and suddenly you're sort of just putting a little bit of credits in the bank. Then if I'm going to actual train, what I will do is I will work on my joints. I'll open whatever I'm going to do, the big priority. And running is pretty simple because it's only one motion. But, you know, I'll prioritize the joint capsules typically first for maybe 3 or 4 minutes. As I'm getting hot and sweaty, I'll move on things. And then I save all the soft tissue work for afterwards. Either I've just finished training because it really helps me to downregulate, or before I go to bed is when I'll do a lot of the soft tissue work because it's downtime, my kids are asleep, I can start to unwind, I can see what's tight and gristly from the day. And that has been really, really sustainable. What I have advocated for is if you can spend 10 or 15 minutes a day sort of systematically working through all your tissues, right? You don't have to fix everything every day, the full thing. Work a little bit at a time, and that aggregates into significant change. I mean, if you went to your physical therapist and like, hey, I spent 90 minutes this week working on this problem, you know, chances are you're going to not need your physical therapist by the time at the end of the week because you worked on a problem for 90 minutes. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's crazy. I just introduced in the past 2 months after realizing how much Spartan racing really truly beats you up, even more so than triathlon, in my opinion, just because you're moving in so many different ways. I'm now up to a once a week 60-minute protocol where it's just mobility. It's just I'm just surrounded by balls and FOMOs. I put on a podcast and go to town, and you know I've kind of got all this medieval torture equipment that keeps showing up at my house thanks to you and others. And
what I think you really hit on something is that, you know, on Sunday I thought we had to go to my daughter's volleyball preseason meeting, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I went to the gym, I went to our garage, I jumped on the bike, and then I literally did the couch stretch and I opened up my hips. And that was what I did for 25 minutes, right? I got hot and then I treated that like a session. Then we came back and then it took me very little time to warm up. And then I did some heavy front squatting. That was all I did, right? And when I advocate for no days off, there are days where you should not be training, but you should be keeping the engine idling. And we want you to be thinking about having a training practice 7 days a week. So if my normal training is about an hour block, it's okay to substitute one of those days where I would normally be a total rest day. Well, that total rest day is called restoration or recovery or adaptation or rolling around on some balls while I watch TV and listen to a podcast. And what you see is that having that one time a week really does give you plenty of time to sort of deep dive. And you've been making a list. You know, you're a savvy guy. And during the course of the week, you're sort of, you know, saying, hey, my hip is short, I'm going to have to spend some extra time on this, you know? And then on that one day, boom, you deep dive on that and it works, it's fantastic.
And I mean, hell, I count that as a workout. I mean, like I'm dripping sweat and breathing hard. I mean, it's literally and I don't want to get crass, but it's very similar to sex. I mean, when you're humping a foam roller and moving around like that in all those different positions, it's very similar metabolically to sex. Like that's what you feel like when you've finished. Possibly not quite as good, depending on how good your sex is, or better.
Better, right. You know, one of the things that I really am advocating for is that I don't think people know what's normal and not normal about their bodies, right? And what we did in the benchmarks around running is saying, hey, here's what you should be able to do for your body. And then you can touch that or not touch that. You know, I mean, and moving towards those normal capacities will improve your performance no matter what, even if you don't ever achieve the standard. Moving towards the standard is the goal. But, you know, one of the things that we tell people is, I'm like, look, if you lay on a tissue and it hurts at all to compression, it's not normal. Like, so lay on a roller, lay on a bottle, lay on a beer can, and if it hurts and you feel like you're going to throw up or it's so painful, then that's a dead giveaway that the tissue is not normal. And what you're seeing is that, you know, normal tissue is not painful to compression. So not only do I immediately have this feedback that my tissues are normal or not, no matter what I lay on, a golf ball, a crossball, doesn't matter, but also tissue should not be stiff. And one of the things that my wife and I do a lot of is we do a lot of partner smashing. And we put in the book is that one of us lays down in front of the TV where we've got something on or we've got some music going and we're holding a glass of wine. And then literally I take an old pair of crutches that I used to teach with, mm-hmm, and I lean into the crutches. And then I literally take my foot and I try to smash my wife's tissues down. you know, through our hamstrings, through our quads, through our calves. And what ends up happening is I get large forces, right, that are distributed over a bigger area of my foot, and I can create much global, higher global shears. And I can tell what's tight and not tight very quickly. I can see what's normal. And it's a way of, even for us, of spending time together. So we, you know, we teach smashing to all our elementary school kids, because kids start to treat themselves. Like, how revolutionary is that? So literally, we had a kid who had heel pain. I taught her to smash her friend. She and her friend have cured the heel problems for their entire soccer team by teaching each other to just do this little gentle smashing. You know what? The chances of you getting hurt smashing are like zero. And that this 9-year-old and 10-year-old girl can tell what's stiff and not stiff. I mean, that's profound.
Yeah.
Work it into your life. Yeah. If you're an athlete, you're probably looking at your nutrition and sleep. Why aren't you looking at your tissue mechanics? Like, it's literally insane that we go as hard as we do now, and we're not looking at creating a ready state for the tissues.
Yep, absolutely. And for everything from neutral feet to flat shoes to thoracic spine, hip flexion, hip extension, hot spots, compression, Kelly goes over basically 12 different standards in this book, Ready to Run. I highly recommend it, just like I recommended his book, Becoming a Supple Leopard. There are two books that sit on my exercise library shelf that I actually use, that actually come back off the shelf, which means that they must be worth something. So so check it out. I'll put everything over in the show notes that Kelly and I talked about today over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/readytorun. And Kelly, thanks for coming on the call today, man.
Oh, and it's my pleasure. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
All right, folks. We'll catch you later.
Visit bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.